This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Randy Richter. Randy is the president of Richter & Company. You can find them at Richter, R-I-C-H-T-E-R, and Company. .com, RichterandCompany.com. Randy, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for inviting me on such a beautiful day.
well, you know, it is what it is. We've been connected on LinkedIn for a while. I think we've run across each other on those occasions when a PMP has invited me to speak. But I actually got to moderate a panel recently with you and Jeff Shen, and I really, really enjoyed the panel and what you had to say, so that's why you're here.
Oh, well, thanks.
So, that being said, give our listeners a little bit of background about you, your company, and perhaps what you did before you started Richter & Company.
All righty, thanks. So, Richter & Company is a competitive analysis and price-to-win consulting firm. What we do is based up in Frederick, Maryland, although we do projects all over the world. We work in the U.S. federal market space as well as commercial and state and local. In the federal space, we do work within the defense, civilian, and intelligence communities. And our job really is to go out and identify for our clients what their customers are really looking to achieve through their acquisition. What are the things that really represent value to them? What are the things that really represent the things that they need to have performed so that then we can help our clients identify what their competitors are going to be doing and in turn help them figure out what's the best way to offer a solution that really discriminates them from everybody else. At the end of the day, our mission is to help our clients win. And bragging a little bit, over the last couple of years, we've helped clients win over $60 billion in programs. So I can't say we're unsuccessful at what we do.
Not a bad number, not a bad number. we're going to talk mainly about small businesses in the market. And just to, you know, lay the groundwork here, I shot you a copy of the recent American Express Open study. They've been doing this for about 4 years now, and one of the interesting points from my perspective is over the past year, small companies that are winning government business have spent an average of $128,638 during the course of that year to win the business. This is up 49%. Over 3 years ago, when it was about $89,000-$90,000, a lot of companies, when they come into this market, aren't thinking about the expenditures it takes to win. With your experience, I know you do work with small business. I know you prefer to do business with larger businesses, but when a small business approaches you, how common is it that they're willing to really do what it takes to win?
Well, so the kinds of things that we do, very honestly, a lot of what we do is labor intensive and therefore expensive and therefore can carry a pretty big ticket price. But I turn that back when I talk to prospective clients and talk to them about really what it is that they're trying to do. Are they trying to spend money simply because they're spending money? Trying to spend money wisely to go after a program that they can and should win on? And if it's the latter, then using outside services like ours really helps them improve their win probability. And so it can be a tremendous value for them. What we see with small businesses, echoing what you said, I think a lot of them don't have a great understanding of exactly what goes into preparing that very first proposal response. And certainly when they submit proposal responses, they don't necessarily understand what it takes to be compliant and compelling and all the different things that are necessary to be successful. Now, you know, having said that, it sounds like that's a problem with small business. That's a problem with everybody. I think a lot of people underestimate both the complexity of the bid and proposal process in today's market, but more importantly, they really underestimate the sophistication of the companies that are winning in today's market. Services from, you know, a lot of companies have great internal proposal processes and things, and unfortunately, the newer companies in the market, regardless of size, tend not to have those things, and as a result, that really kind of hurts them. The study, one of the things that it showed in here is that as a percentage of revenue, smaller businesses tend to spend a whole lot more money on proposals, going after contracts and things, than the larger businesses. Simply put, the larger, more established companies, I believe, tend to be more efficient in what they do, more effective in what they do, and they really have a better idea of how they're approaching things.
Okay. Now, competitive intelligence is kind of, number one, I love competitive intel. I've always found it a difficult sell for some companies, especially novices to the market, because I'll say we need to look at who your competitors are. And the stock answer is, it's almost like the, you know, a refrain from a hymn with 900 verses, because you get it 900 times. And that is, we know who our competitors are. Well, you may know in the commercial world, but in the government world, it can be completely different.
Right. One of the trends that we see in today's market is that the amount of competitiveness for a shrinking number of competitions is dramatically increasing. There's a program that the RFP came out about a year ago, and because it's still an open program, I'm not going to name it, but that particular program, the government was estimating they would receive 10 to 12 bids on a particular program. They ended up receiving close to 40 bids on the program, and as a result, they had to spend quite a bit more time evaluating proposals, and to date still haven't issued a response. On the other side of that, because of the competitiveness and because the big companies are really, really trying to maintain revenue and market share, the big dogs would 2 years ago wouldn't look at a $500,000 proposal. Now they are, simply because it's one that they believe they can win quickly and easily, and as a result, they can bring in some all-important revenue with minimum muss and fuss. What that means to the small businesses is that the amount of competition that they're facing today is ramping up dramatically, which in turn means they're going to have to spend more money to stay ahead of the curve and figure out how they can offer a solution that their clients are going to want to buy.
Okay. Now, that brings up a whole different can of worms, too. Do you do research for companies that want to get on Teams?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Have you seen recently, or define recently, last 3+ years, same thing? You may be on a team, but even with a guarantee or a verbal guarantee, you just aren't realizing any money from that contract.
Oh, there's always been this kind of jujitsu thing between prime contractors and subcontractors, where the goal has often been to, hey, let's maximize my revenue at the expense of the people on my team. That's a traditional game that gets played. What we see is that accelerating. We also see that even as a going-in position, where the subcontractors now are recognizing that's more likely to happen and therefore taking a harder line approach and developing more tightly written subcontracts and teaming agreements, there's still massive pressure driving that down. And what that does, by the way, that really drives down the prices. that people are able to charge because, hey, if a company down the street, there's another teammate says they can provide a programmer for $30 an hour, well, I guess I have to go down to $25 an hour, even if that means I have to now find somebody who may or may not be qualified to do the work. You know, it's a real problem in today's low-price, technically acceptable market.
Okay, I want to pick that up on the other side of the break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today is Randy Richter of Richter & Company. Randy offers services in the proposal arena, competitive intelligence, and price to win. So, Randy, when a company approaches you, basically you make it very clear that you don't do everything. So what exactly do you do, and what's the process for people getting started?
So, Mark, actually, that's a great point. One of the things that really separates us from some of the other companies that do what we do is that we only do externally facing work. That means we only look at things that are outside of our customer. We don't write proposals. We don't help our customers develop cost volumes. We don't do that kind of work that exposes us to our client solutions and strategies because, very honestly, if we know what those strategies and solutions are, then the next program down the road where my former client is now a competitive target, I've got a conflict of interest. And to avoid conflicts of interest, we never cross that line. That's something that we believe very strongly in. So the kinds of things that we want to do are designed to help our clients develop a discriminated solution. So quick terminology thing. We talk about things that are differentiators, something you do differently from everybody else. But a discriminated solution is one that you do differently from your competitors that the customer cares about. Now, that means that you have to understand what it is the customer cares about. So we do competitive analysis focused on identifying who the customer is, who's going to be evaluating the proposal, what their hot buttons and interest and concerns are, and we're really trying to identify the requirements that are key to winning the deal. They're never going to appear in the RFP. You know, you kind of think of an iceberg. You've got the things up on top that are visible to everybody. Those are in the RFP. But the implicit requirements underneath the waterline, hey, they're the ones that'll sink you if you miss them. So we do competitive analysis up front to identify what the customer's desires really are and how they're going to pay for it and how they're going to evaluate it. We look at the competitive field then to identify who are the companies that are out there looking at the program and who are the companies that are capable of bidding on the program. And then we do a price to win, which our definition's a little bit different from, I think, some other people's. The price-to-win analysis, really, we try to identify from a cost and price standpoint how these competitors are actually going to create a bid and how they're going to offer that bid in response to the RFP's requirements.
Okay. So when you explain this process to a novice, mm-hmm. do they get it?
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. I think people believe that they understand the concept of competitive intelligence. Mm-hmm. I need to know what my competitors are going to be doing. Where I think a lot of companies fall down is that they also believe, well, gee, we know who our competitors are. And the problem in today's market is that, like I say, everything has become so competitive that it's the bidders that you don't know of that'll be the ones that'll end up sinking you as you try to go forward on a program. If there are five companies that you are absolutely positive and absolutely concerned about because you run into them every day, well, there's six or seven more companies out there that are circling around this looking at how do they get their nose under the tent.
Okay.
And so that piece, that's the piece that typically people have problems with. You know, it's not the ones that you know that you worry about. It's the ones that you don't know about.
Well, you know, more often than not, this is a side of the business that I do not do. I do the marketing side. Mm-hmm. I help people gain visibility. I help them define that differentiator you referenced. But I don't go as far as to make it a discriminated solution, usually, unless it's really, really obvious. Because a discriminated solution is going to apply probably to a specific situation. But when I get calls, I often get calls from people that want a one-stop shop. And, you know, they want, identify the opportunity, then help us bid, blah, blah, but it can't cost too much.
Yeah.
The investment side of this, and that's why I wanted to reference the Amex study here. The investment side of this is absolutely critical. You probably haven't read either of my books because you don't need to.
Oh, Mark, I've read them 12 times.
in Selling to the Government, in the first chapter, I say 90% of the companies that come into this market are going to leave quickly and blame somebody else. And I think that's a conservative number, actually.
So here's an anecdote. I worked with a small business a couple of years ago who they were having problems with bringing in new business. And so I asked them when I was talking to them, well, you know, how many proposals have you submitted in the last 2 years? And their answer was 65. I said, 65 proposals in 2 years. Man, you guys are busy. Well, how many of those did you win? None. Okay, well, now I can see why you need some help, right? So when I went in and looked at them, what I really identified was that this company had extremely strong qualifications with current contracts at very, very high C-level levels within two agencies, really close relationships, and what they were offering on those existing contracts was some very, very specific and very valued expertise. In other words, they had something that discriminated them. So I went back to them and said, okay, of these 65 proposals, how many proposals really were based on this solution that you offer? One. Okay. And how many of them were to these agencies that where you already have a great foothold? None. And the reason was, well, gee, we want to try to expand our offerings. Okay. What they were really doing was shotgunning. Anything that had a pulse, they would bid on. What we did over the course of the next year was really fine-tune what they were doing so that they could define, here's a very, very tightly defined market based on our existing customer base and adjacencies. Here's a very specific product offering based on our existing discriminated capabilities and some adjacencies. And over the course of the next year, we bid on 13 projects and won 12 of them. So,
their win rate's a little higher.
Well, but what they did, and this is something that I think is really critical in the market, so they really had to develop a real business strategy for what they were doing. Their idea of growth was not, we're going to win business anywhere we can win it. It now became, we're going to win business based on our known capabilities and qualifications, which our customers like, and therefore makes it easy for them to select us moving forward.
And then, you know, one of the key words there is customer.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, staying in an agency where they know you.
Absolutely. Now, over time then, they would then be able to take that existing customer base and expand it, because now they're working on, they've got qualifications, they've got past performance, and more importantly, they've got a great established network of referrals within the customer base. Because let's face it, everybody within the government talks to everybody else. And if you've done a great job for this agency, the other agencies are going to hear about it. So by starting off with a focused approach rather than a shotgun approach, now they have the ability to continue to grow that market.
Well, you know, we've over the years, I've worked with a number of companies that wanted to expand to other agencies, and I'd ask them one basic question: how much business are you doing with your current client?
Mm-hmm.
Is there room for growth?
Mm-hmm.
you know, it ain't brain surgery. You know, if you go to a new ball field, are you going to be picked first? No. You know, you're going to be picked last because nobody knows you.
Well, you know, there's a lot to be said for not having your eggs all in one basket, you know, especially in these days of sequestration and budget cuts and everything else. But on the same token, you can't just willy-nilly go out after programs anywhere because they don't know you. They've got no idea what your track record is or what your capabilities are. All you are is some business developer walking in off the street, handing them a white paper and saying, ooh, 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 pick us. It's not a very successful strategy these days.
Yeah. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are picking up this conversation on the other side. Back in a few. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Randy Richter, Richter & Company. You can find them at Richter, R-I-C-H-T-E-R, and company.com. Randy, all of this stuff is driven by info. What kind of information do you need to develop a successful proposal?
So we kind of classify things along the same lines as the strategic and competitive intelligence professionals. We talk in terms of key intelligence topics and key intelligence questions. Key intelligence topics are the broad things that you generally need to know to pursue and capture a program. The key intelligence questions are the specific bits of information that you have to answer in order to make an intelligent decision about whether to pursue or capture a particular program. So what we tell people is that as they go through whatever type of gate reviews they have within their organization, it's really important to identify a very specific series of questions that executives need answered to make that intelligent decision. And each organization is going to be different in terms of what those questions are and when they have to be answered. But our recommendation is that if you walk into a gate review and you can't answer those specific questions, then the default decision from management should be to cancel the pursuit and spend money on something else that you know more about. So when you're looking for competitive information, competitive intelligence, it's not just, you know, raw data. It's one thing to know that a company that you're competing against, Benny's Bait and Sushi Bar, has revenue of $74 million a year. That's Anka data that's not useful all by itself. But knowing how that revenue has grown over time, projecting forward to where they're going, and identifying how they're looking to achieve that growth, that becomes the competitive intelligence that is useful to you as you go along the way. What you're really trying to do through the whole competitive intelligence process is identify information that can point out to you what your competitor's strengths are so you can figure out a way to at least match them, what your competitor's weaknesses are so that you can figure out how to ghost them and how to beat them with your own better capability, and really identify the things that you can offer to your prospective client to make them select you at the end of the day rather than somebody else.
Okay, so what would be the sources of information that you'd start with to make all of these determinations?
Well, so first off, it's got to be very important, and everybody has to understand that the whole competitive intelligence process done properly, it's completely legal, it's completely ethical, it's completely moral. There are a whole series of very, very standard laws and policies and practices that people who do this like us for a living follow. Because at the end of the day, we want to make sure that we can only provide information to our clients that they can use and they can properly use. So what we're generally looking for is open source, non-proprietary information. Open source meaning that it's publicly available and accessible to anyone who knows how to look for it and where to find it. And non-proprietary, meaning that it's not trade secret or restricted data that outsiders of a company are not supposed to have. So you're looking for sources of that data. There are a ton of sources available, ranging from SEC filings that you can get from the Edgar system to data on contracts and performance that you can get out of GovWin or the Federal Procurement Data Systems and all the different systems that feed into it. There are paid information sources that you can connect to, and Bloomberg, for example, is a great one that's very, very powerful and capable. And there are programs like EasyGovOps that are new entrants into the market, and their whole mission really is to provide information that their clients tell them they need to make that informed decision. We look for budget information. We look for organizational information. We look for past performance information. We look for information about how funding is going to be used and when it's going to be used. We look for information about capabilities, and specifically, you know, we look for information about how those capabilities are going to change over time. So all of that information can be available from open source, non-proprietary sources. And like I say, we've got a class that where we teach competitive analysis, and we've got a whole section in that class where we identify, I think it's 45 specific sources and ways of using it. And that list, man, it just changes and grows every day.
Okay. So outside of FPDS, do you take a deep dive into schedule sales, or for, you know, considering that schedule sales represent only about 7% of the total government spend, how important would that kind of data be?
So here's one of the things that we always try to suggest to people. Looking at, I'm trying to remember now the exact quote, the race may not go to the swiftest or the first out of the gate, but that's the smart way to bet. What we try to do is look at the historical data like that. So we'll look at GSA schedule buys, or on a non-GSA contract, look at IDIQ buys and determine patterns from that. Is a company typically offering pricing at some percentage off of the list price of the contract or against commercial list price? Does the company target these types of opportunities versus those types of opportunities? Do they go after any opportunity that comes out as a task order request, or do they focus on just a few things coming out from a particular agency or bureau? Based on that information, we can develop an assessment of the personality of the individual bidders. And it's that personality that's really important, because it helps define how they're likely to proceed moving forward in the next program. But again, that's a smart way to bet, but it's not necessarily the right way to bet, because let's face it, things change over time.
Yeah. Well, let me ask a question slightly different then. You said the personality of the bidder. So if the proposal manager from company A moves to company B, are you tracking that and factoring that in?
Well, yeah, not so much the proposal manager, but certainly capture managers and business mm-hmm. developers.
Okay. So it's key staff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's useful to know that, you know, Mark Amtower was the capture manager on these five programs. And, oh, look, in each one of these five programs, there is a specific strategy that he used on every one of them. Hey, do you think he's going to use something similar going forward? Well, it's worked. So, again, looking at historical data.
So do you leverage LinkedIn, trade pubs, all of the above to monitor where these key people migrate to?
Absolutely. And actually, that's a great question, because social media sites are growing in importance to folks like us, simply because people have a bad habit of saying too much. We looked at a program a couple of years ago where the customer asked us to try to identify what we could about them in the context of a specific program. And after 3 days, we had come back and said, okay, so here's who your client is. Here are the names of 62 of the 65 people on your program. Here is what they do. Here's their basic responsibilities. All of this information. Oh, my gosh, how did we find the information? Well, their director of human resources had created a LinkedIn site and encouraged everybody on the contract to populate it. Well, wonderful. Now we could find that information, and that also meant that so could their competitors. So, you know, LinkedIn is a great tool for competitive intelligence people. And I mean, if you go to my site on LinkedIn, there's some nice information about who we are and what we do, but doesn't talk about clients, doesn't talk about opportunities, doesn't talk about programs, because all that information, that's stuff that we don't share.
No, and you shouldn't.
No. Oh, and by the way, here's something that I really, really strongly recommend to everybody. Everybody, I think, is at least somewhat familiar with the Freedom of Information Act, and essentially believe that under the Act, you know, you can go back and you can request information from the government. Okay, very true. I always ask when I have discussions with people, so do you routinely FOIA contracts after they've been awarded? Oh, yes, we do. Do you FOIA your own documents? Well, no. Why should we do that? Well, the reason is that as part of the FOIA process, people get the ability to go through and redact information. And the redaction process, if not done properly, means that you've now posted information on or made information available to competitors, which is now open source, non-proprietary data, which may contain pricing information and strategies and names of people and all those kinds of things. So we always tell our clients, FOIA your own documents. Make sure they're properly done, and if not, fix it before it goes out.
How often do you offer those competitive intel classes? I may have to take one.
Hey, the next one's coming up in December. December 11th and 12th in beautiful Frederick, Maryland.
There you go. All right. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If I were you, I'd sign up for that class. We'll be back after these. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Randy Richter of Richter & Company in Frederick, Maryland. Randy is a competitive intelligence and price to win expert, been doing this for quite some time. So we've been talking about all of these information sources, all of this stuff accumulating. How do you put it together in a package that becomes a proposal?
So companies that are successful in the federal bidding process really understand that whether they do the competitive intelligence internally or they do it externally, it's not something they put in a vellum-bound binder that they post on a shelf and never look at again. They actually use the information moving forward. When you've identified what it is, for instance, that your customers are really focused, that represent value, for example, now you can develop parts of your solution to offer that value. And frankly, even in today's low-price, technically acceptable market, you still have to include value in your proposal simply because the evaluators are people and you want to give them the ability to say, well, okay, they gave me something I was really looking forward to back here. Not sure they're completely acceptable here, but hey, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and rank them as acceptable. Normal part of the process. When you're really identifying what it is then your competitors are going to be offering, again, now you can develop pieces of your solution to at least match the strengths of what those competitors are offering and identify the problem areas that everybody has, and now figure out ways of offering within your proposal a better mousetrap, not to highlight in a negative sense the competitor problems, but to ghost those problems by showing how you do it better. Too many proposals that we have seen over the course of the years are focused on us, not on the customer or our customer. One of the things that companies do as a proposal evaluation process is simply go through with a magic marker and count the number of times the customer's name is mentioned versus the time your name is mentioned. And in general, if that number is not dramatically higher towards the customer than you, it ain't a great proposal. The competitive intelligence piece really helps focus that by really identifying it as what your customer wants so you know you can address it.
Okay. I need...
It's like a fire hose.
Yeah, it is a fire hose, but it's a good fire hose. So we have all of this stuff now. These small businesses are out there. They need help. They may even know they need help, but they probably don't know how to select. So you've got kind of a process that leads up to the selection process, and then give me your criteria.
So when companies are looking for, let's do it this way. We would really identify two different kinds of prospective clients. Call them companies that are new, companies that are experienced, companies that are very small, companies that are very large. There are a number of characteristics that are pretty common. On the one hand, they've got a shotgun approach. They go after any type of a proposal that has a pulse. On the other hand, there's a strategic reason why they go after an opportunity. So shotgun versus strategic. On the small, inexperienced side, they generally are putting things together at the last minute. Their proposal room is somebody's office, and they move the pizza boxes on the floor to do the work, versus having a process that defines things and deliverables and specific steps that have to occur at given times. The less successful companies have a short-term focus. More successful companies have a long-term focus. The less successful companies, everybody pitches in to do everything, so there's a lot of great generalists, but the more successful companies have people who specialize in different parts of the proposal or capture process and therefore can develop the relationships and the expertise to do a great job at it. And the less successful companies tend to focus on doing everything with in-house resources because, hey, it's less expensive, versus the more successful companies that will invest in either external support or will establish something that looks like external support capabilities within their organization. And it's really that last element that ends up being kind of key. You know, people all the time give me grief because, you know, well, hey, Randy, you're just trying to sell your company and your services. Yeah, I am. But the reality is whether you do competitive analysis and price to win internally or externally, if the information is not valued by the people that are writing the proposal and valued by the people that are developing the solutions and valued by the management that's making the decision to spend money on it or not, it's going to be a useless effort. We find that it's often easier for external people to provide competitive analysis and price to win support because at the end of the day, we can bring in bad news and present it to management and survive it a whole lot better than somebody who's internal to the company. You know, if you walk in and say, well, you know, we've spent $2 million and 6 months of effort on this proposal and we've got a 1% chance of winning it, you as an internal person can get fired. We're going to get fired too, but hey, we've got other clients, so we can survive it. You as an individual may not be able to. If what you're really looking for is, how do I make a choice about do I bring in outside help versus doing it on my own, regardless of whether it's a capture manager, a proposal manager, a proposal writer, a competitive analysis, a price to win. The thought process has to be pretty much the same. Do I have the knowledge, expertise, capabilities, and tools to do it internally? And will the results of that be valued by all the stakeholders in the process? If I answer no to either of those two questions, it's far more appropriate and far more cost-effective to bring in outside help to perform some or all of that whole process.
Okay. Is there any, you know, I mean, there's not a Craigslist, if you will, for consulting services in the GovCon arena. Maybe I should start one. But as you and I both know, very few people are going to commit on paper or on the web to endorse or not. They may endorse publicly, but they're not going to say, hey, this guy sucks.
Right, right.
So it's a relationship-driven thing. How do you find us?
So one of the things that we recommend, there are organizations and associations out there that are communities of interest. There's the Association of Proposal Management Personnel, for example, APMP. Mark, you mentioned it at the top of the show. APMP was originally set up as an organization focused on developing and growing the expertise of proposal people. But now they've got a huge investment in capture and in business development functions. Joining an organization like APMP means that you're going to get to network with people, you're going to get to meet the companies that do these kinds of services, you're going to get to learn new tips and tricks from your peers within your own community. And that's a great source. LinkedIn is a great source. There are groups out there focused on the associations like APMP, but also affinity groups for proposal writers, the Proposal Cafe, and Price to Win, and all these other organizations. So those are great sources for doing this. But at the end of the day, a lot of it boils down to just word of mouth. Yeah, people often will not talk about, well, yes, this was a sucky response, or we weren't happy with this. But at the end of the day, what we found is many times when people are unhappy with the results of an analysis or the results of a proposal, it's because those results did not match what the client's starting thoughts were. And, you know, in terms of what we do, our job is not to come back in and reinforce our client's preconceived ideas. Our job is to come in, speak truth to power, and really present the information that they really need to know that they don't know that will help them win at the end of the day.
There you go. Randy, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hey, Mark, it's been great. Thank you.
You can find Randy at RichterandCompany.com. You can find Randy on LinkedIn. I suggest you do both. This is not my day job. If you need help on the marketing side of the government market, you want to make sure your company has significant ROI on its marketing programs, or if you want to develop a very strong social media, particularly LinkedIn presence, give me a call. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.